Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jax weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football and Christmas and Hanukkah show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. We're here for the final week of football picks, and we've got a lot to cover tonight. We're not, it's, as I mentioned on the last show when we did the NBA report, we are going to actually have, like, really the equivalent of one and a half shows in the span of one show. So it's going to be an interesting time. We're going to have a recap of the college football championships. We're going to look into the bowl season, give our the bowls that we love and the bowls that we wouldn't watch in our backyard. We'll do a preview of the New Year's Six, which include the two championship games, the two playoff games, that is. And so we're going to do this again. Let me just put Andy on myself. So there you go. And adding Andy right now. Just add that. See if that works. Let's see how that works. I don't know. I hope that works. I hope Andy can hear me. Let me actually just get him on right now. Let's see.
Andy Jacobs.
Andy, are you there? Hello? Oh, shoot. I got Andy's voicemail. Nope, no good. Andrew, can you hear me? Hello? We don't have contact at this point. So let me try it again, and we'll see if this works. Well, anyway, let me just continue to recap everything. I don't know why he's struggling to get on here. That's kind of weird. Okay. Let me put him back. Well, anyway, I'm going to continue to roll here. So as we get going, it was a mostly blowout laden weekend in college football, and let me see if we can have Andy now. Andy, can you hear us?
Hello? Yeah. Hello. Hey, I can hear you. You pay the phone bill this time?
I guess you could say that. All right, let's go ahead and get going. So we got a lot on the table. I'll have to check and see if John's with us too, but Ron is as well. So we got a full house tonight. Our guest picks are coming from Shurin, a.k.a. Chris from Floral Park. And last week, we want to thank Dave and Queens, who did the picks last week. We'll tell you how it did in just a moment. So, as I mentioned, we've really got a whole lot to cover tonight. So let's not waste any time. This is the time everybody's been waiting for. The college football championship to be decided. Many bowls to be decided. And Army-Navy on the cusp of during this weekend, too. We can talk a little bit about that as well. And then the NFL playoff seedings heating up. And it's still a little bit of drama regarding who ends up with the number number one seeds in the NFC mostly, but maybe even the AFC may have a little drama there. So there are so much to decide, and we have it all rolling on the last week of the season for the contest. That is, let's hit it. Football picks week 16, and now we recap what happened last week. A bounce back week for Ron, 3-1. Good job out of him, and he pretty much ices the contest. What a great job out of Ron this season. The rest of the panel, Andy in Seattle went 2-2. John in Connecticut went 2-2, and I, Dave in the city, also went 2-2. Guest picks from Dave in Queens, 2-2 as well, which lead us to these standings after 15 weeks. Ron is solidly in first place at 37-19-2. Andy's in second place at 29, 22, and 7. And that's ahead of John by virtue of the lead in the loss column. John has 30, 26, and 2. So in last place is me, Dave, at 26, 30, and 2. And honestly, I'll take it because we were having some bad weeks there throughout the year. Guest picks this year, 29, 27, and 2. There were ups and there were downs with the guest pickers too. But overall, very solid year. So with that on the table, We look ahead. And we also look behind a little bit, too, because we had the college championship, the college conference championships. Very few actual surprises, really. I mean, the only actual upset in terms of the conference championships were, once again, the MAC. And you never seem to have... I think the underdog now has won outright four times in a row. Pretty close to that. Central Michigan, favored by 7 points, loses outright to Miami, who only had like 200... I think like 200, 300 total yards. That's passing and rushing together. And they won the game. So that gives you an idea how ugly that MAC game was. Other than that, really no surprises anywhere. I mean, Wisconsin did have a lead in the Big Ten championship, but Ohio State still managed to put together a very good third and fourth quarter to put it away, although it was not a cover. So let's go ahead and bring in our panel. We'll recap that. Then we'll get right into bowl season and then on from there. So let's introduce the panel first. And let's bring in Ron in New Jersey. Ron, how's it going tonight?
Dave, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, doing well. And now joining us on the program as well, I believe he's still on the line, John in Connecticut. How's it going, John?
Doing well, Dave. Enjoying the bowl matchups that we're going to get into. And it was a good weekend of football, so glad to be back.
Yeah, look. Definitely in the NFL it was a good week of football. We'll talk about that as well. Andy, welcome back to the show. I'm glad we got you on more smoothly this time.
Good to be back. Holiday season is in full swing.
Oh, it is. It is. Hopefully you guys are doing all right with the present shopping and everything. So let's recap last week's college action. You know, normally in week 16, we're not really doing that, but this time we had it all scrunched together. So let's go back to Ron and talk about the conference championships. What did you see from the weekend?
Yeah, not really anything too exciting or earth-shattering. But I guess, the biggest upset was probably Oregon over Utah in terms of the playoff matchups on Friday night. That Utah game reminded me of the game earlier in the season. They played it and lost against USC. I mean, they just came out flat, had no offense whatsoever. Oregon just seemed like they wanted it, 10 times more than Utah did. And, that's a bad reflection on the coaching there. I know Utah is a solidly coached team, but, two big losses this year, one in a really big spot last week. And you come out flat in both games. It's a poor indication, of your ability to get the team up in a big spot. Other than that, I mean, like you said, the MAC game was pretty much unwatchable. Oklahoma and Baylor was a weird game. It was close. Oklahoma seemed like they controlled the game throughout. Baylor got down to their third quarterback after Brewer got a concussion, and the backup kid didn't do anything. So they got down to the third quarterback and actually tied it up late, went to overtime, and Oklahoma pulled it out. That was a strange game because if you watched it, you would have thought Oklahoma, won by, two, three touchdowns, and they had to win in overtime. And like you said, Ohio State and Wisconsin. Wisconsin had the lead in the first half. Looked like everything was going their way. Justin Fields was thrown off of his game, and it just goes to show you how much depth and talent that Ohio State has, that they were able to withstand that and really roll over Wisconsin in the second half and, lock up what many thought was going to be the number one seed, ended up being the number two seed. And the other game, the SEC game, LSU just dominated Georgia. You can't be mad as a college football fan having LSU as number one in the playoffs, because you look at their body of work this year. I mean, they destroyed basically everybody that they played. So good for them. It was a big win for them. And the ACC game, I mean, you don't even have to talk about it. Clemson killed Virginia like we knew they were going to. And, it was a cakewalk year for them, basically. And, yeah, not too many exciting games, but it set up a nice little playoff for us to watch this year.
Yeah, I like the seeds. It is interesting that LSU overtook the number one spot, but I believe they deserve that. And a good call on Utah. I forgot to mention that. I did think that there was a little air of suspicion with me in Utah, and I think I brought that up on the board. I wasn't all in with Utah winning that game. I just felt like something bad could have happened. I didn't really trust Huntley to throw the ball in a big spot. And surely enough, you know, they were down early, and they were actually kind of fortunate to get back in it. So, yeah, I forgot about that. Good call on it. So let's go to John, and let's get your recap of last week's action.
Yeah, Utah laying that huge egg on Friday night, just completely not showing up from the start. Pretty surprising considering the way they had been playing for the past month. And, you know, with a coach like Winningham, you wouldn't think that would happen, but just completely flat from the start. And then they finally do get back in the game, and he punts from the Oregon 40-yard line in the fourth quarter. And that was just awful. He was essentially giving up. Like, why are you punting in that spot? And of course, Oregon scores on a big play a couple plays later, and the game is over at that point. So that was just brutal. And they sealed their own fate. And honestly, it would have been interesting if the Baylor Oklahoma game played out the same way, and Utah had they come back to win by 3 points. Who would have been the fourth team? Obviously, the discussion is a moot point at this juncture, but. But yeah, that would have been an interesting discussion, but they made their own bed and they're out, and now they get to play in the Alamo Bowl against Texas. Then the MAC game was very, very disappointing. Central Michigan was one of my picks, and just, I don't know what Jim McElwain said to his team at halftime. They had all the momentum heading into the locker room, and then just completely did shit in the second half. Like, everything that was working, they didn't do in the second half, and it was just mind-boggling to watch. And somehow that Miami of Ohio team is the MAC champion, which just goes to show you how bad that conference is. That team is the MAC champion. But yeah, really nothing. Oh, I'll talk about the Baylor game. The third string quarterback, he was playing pretty well. It was very weird that Baylor scored 23 points on 8 first downs. Like, all their big plays, they had like 3 big plays in the entire game. And what killed them at the end of the game was that last big pass where the receiver couldn't score and they had to settle for a field goal and eventually go into overtime. If that guy had been able to make the next 20 yards, they probably would have won, because they would have held Oklahoma on the last drive. And then heading into overtime, I said it on Twitter, it was the rare occasion where I think that being on offense would have helped Baylor first. Because with the pressure of having to score a touchdown with your third string quarterback, you knew it wasn't going to go well. Of course, he just throws it incomplete or into the dirt 3 times and then just gets a desperation, like almost sacked on fourth down. You knew they weren't going to score once Oklahoma scored first. So I think in that situation, they might have almost been better off playing offense first, in my opinion anyway. But yeah, those were really the only interesting games to note. You know, Ron mentioned Wisconsin, kind of folding in the second half, but everyone kind of saw that coming. And Ohio State almost covered too, being down 21-7 at the half. But, and you saw all the people on Twitter saying, oh, what if Wisconsin blows them out? Are they going to get number 4? Blah, blah, blah. Even if Wisconsin won that game, they were not going to get up to number 4. I would have been shocked to see that. But again, it didn't happen. We end up with the 4 best teams. And, you know, this is actually one of the easy years for the committee, because it's clearly the 4 that deserve to be in there. I can only imagine if the BCS was still around, who would have been left out between the 3 undefeated teams. So we should be lucky to have the 4 team playoff this season.
Yeah. No, that would have been a disaster if it was the BCS system right now. Okay, Andy, let's get your recap.
Yeah, you guys did a great job. I am so down on Whittingham. I mean, good call by you, Dave, sniffing it. You know, Utah had everything to play for. Oregon was basically, win or lose, they're probably getting that Rose Bowl berth, right? So, mm-hmm. But Herbert, as we know, he's had an affinity for kind of being Jekyll and Hyde, but he had a great first half. He didn't really have to do much in the second half. But Whittingham, he goes for it on fourth down like 3 times throughout the game. And on the last time where you really need to go for it, you get tight. Come on now. You just it's too much pressure on to put on your defense. I mean, yeah, the defense has been playing well in the second half, but you're at the plus 40. Have some balls and go for it. And now, you know, now they get to play in some, you know, meaningless bowl, and that's Utah in a nutshell. That was an entertaining Baylor-Oklahoma game. Yeah, the third-string quarterback, very feast or famine. Wonder how things would have turned out had Brewer been able to play the game as a healthy quarterback. Again, Oklahoma's in the playoff, but, you know, they have a pretty asterisk next to them just due to their defensive shortcomings. And, you know, I think that's why they're like a 12-point underdog in the playoff. As good as they are, as explosive they are on offense, you just can't trust these Big 12 schools in the tournament, because, you know, their defense shortcomings is just too much. Quick thought on Memphis-Cincinnati game was pretty entertaining. You know, Norvell is taking the Florida State job. He's kind of like a Todd Graham 2.0. He actually was Todd Graham's like assistant in the various posts that Graham was at before Norvell got his big chance with Memphis. So we'll see how he does with Florida State. Now Memphis plays Penn State in a Cotton Bowl. Now that game is just tough to get into, because James Franklin's a dick. Memphis without their head coach, you don't know how they're going to perform. So we'll see what happens there. LSU is just on another planet right now. You know, Georgia just wasn't really Georgia throughout this year on an offensive standpoint. Fromm just he just kind of leveled out compared to last year. A quick thought on that Boise-Hawaii game. As someone that had Hawaii 14, my God, Nick Rolovic, the head coach, he used to be a quarterback there many moons ago, but my God, he's a freaking egghead, because that game was basically 3-3 with 2 minutes left in the first half, and they let Boise State score on a 4th and 6 to make it 7-3, and then Hawaii, no respect, no concept of clock management, go 3 and out, and then Boise State scores again. They scored 14 points in basically the last 90 seconds of the second quarter. And the announcers were alluding to, like, it was basically deja vu, because the first time they played in the regular season, it was a 7-point game with, 3 minutes left in the second quarter, and Hawaii gave up, 21 points to Boise State. Just an atrocious job. And now they play BYU. And we'll talk about those bowls later. But, you know, that game could have been a little closer than it was. Shame on Hawaii. Shame on the ACC for making us watch that atrocious championship game in prime time. Yeah, Virginia actually was able to move the ball the first couple series, but they left some points on the board early. Clemson's offense could do anything they want. The backup quarterback came into the fourth quarter, and they were actually throwing the ball. You know, Dabo wanted to just probably apply as much style as possible, and then wearing that Nike sweatshirt, it just reminds me of like a Russell S. or Champion sweatshirt from like 1984, but it looks good on him. And then that Ohio State Wisconsin game, let's Gus Johnson nicknaming the Captain Jack, the Wisconsin quarterback, let's calm down now. Ohio State was definitely kind of sleepwalking in that first half, and then they put everything together in the second half. Once the Wisconsin punter dropped the long snap, that was basically the goose being cooked for Wisconsin. And I was, as someone with Wisconsin plus 16.5, we were getting a very, very, very antsy in that fourth quarter. But thankfully, they held on. But yeah, it was just a lot of one-sided matchups in the big conference games, and sometimes that's what happens. But it did really materialize into a very ho-hum selection process on Sunday morning.
Yeah, it did. Very few, just like everyone else said, very little drama in that regard. And yet they still had the presence of mind to stretch out the bowl announcements for 8 hours. It's like, that's the top four, but then the rest of them, like, it took like the whole day. Pretty nuts. So let's get into these bowls. We'll start with the non-New Year's Six bowls. So that's quite a big grouping. And Army Navy's on too. We'll talk. Maybe we can get to that in picks as well. But after that, it's going to be a whole bunch of bowls. Just a ton of bowls. Even have bowls before Saturday. They have like the Bahamas Bowl, I think, that's on a Friday or Thursday or something like that. There's a lot going on with the bowl season. So I'm going to give it to each of the guys in the panel. And they can highlight the games that they really like from this non-New Year's Six grouping, and then the games they would not watch in their backyard. So let's start with Ron in New Jersey and get your look at the bowl season.
All right, I got three games that I'm looking forward to. And, you know, let's be honest, we're probably going to watch all of them, regardless if we are looking forward to them or not. But three of the games that I picked out, number one is the Cheez-It Bowl. I know the Cheez-It Bowl doesn't, you know, stir any real emotions in anybody, but I like the matchup Washington State and Air Force. Washington State, a team that Andy knows well with Mike Leach and the quarterback Gordon, love to throw the ball around. Air Force actually had a really good year this year. And they score a ton of points too. That's a game where if it was on, Pac-12 after dark, something like that. I mean, that's almost a must watch because you know it's going to end up being something like 63-57, something like that. There's going to be no defense played, and it's just going to go back and forth. And you put that on in prime time or whenever it is in the bowl season, and you know that's an easy watch. It's a fun watch. So that's the first game I'm taking a look at. Second game, the New Orleans Bowl, Appalachian State and UAB. And I know the App State coach got taken by Missouri. So they'll be playing without a coach, but their team consistently the past couple of years is, you know, right outside of that, New Year's Six bowl range, and right outside of the Memphises and the Cincinnati's and the Boise States. I mean, they're right there. They're a good team, and they're fun to watch. And UAB is. That story is going to get told at some point, probably in Hollywood. You know, they lost the program for a couple years. All the kids went to different schools. They decided to pick up the program with Bill Clark, the coach. And almost immediately, they were going to bowl games and having a winning record. And they've been one of the most consistent teams the past couple years. And to me, that's just an it's going to be a good game. It should be a good game. I know App State is favored big, but UAB, I have a feeling will keep it close. And you know, it's an under the radar game that is definitely watchable. And I'm looking forward to that one. And the other one is the Holiday Bowl, USC and Iowa. And we all know Iowa is nothing to write home about, but. USC has been sneaky good this year, and I know a lot of USC fans, and Dave, you could probably speak to this mm-hmm. more than anybody else, but the decision to keep Helton is probably not going over that well within the USC fandom. But in my opinion, if you're not getting an Urban Meyer or you're not getting a big time coach to come in there and take over for Helton, I mean, there's really no reason to change it now, and especially with the year that they had. I mean, they lost their starting quarterback game one, and really, I mean, they're a couple games away from being in the Pac-12 title game, and the future looks bright, at least in the short term, for USC. They found a really good answer with Slovis at quarterback. And they were an entertaining team to watch this year. I would give Helton another year. Let's see if Graham Harrell, the offensive coordinator, I know Texas was trying to hire him. If he goes and next year that offense struggles, then we know that, Helton probably isn't going to make it another year, and he'll be gone. But for the time being, I mean, they've been a fun team to watch. And Iowa, this year's Iowa team isn't, you know, and last year as well, they're not the typical, you know, run the ball 50 times a game. They actually let Stanley throw quite a bit, and I have a feeling that, you know, that game could turn into, you know, an entertaining back-and-forth game. And, you know, just to me, the Holiday Bowl is always one of the fun bowls to watch. The atmosphere, you know, the history of it, even go back to the beginning when, you know, back in the early 80s when the Holiday Bowls first started, and it was BYU going up against the, you know, the Michigans and the you know, the Power Five teams like that and beating them. So to me, that's always been a game that I look forward to. So those are three games on my radar, three games I wouldn't watch. And let's be fair, this year the MAC was beyond shitty this year. It really was. And I mean, you just goes to show the title game was, you know, ridiculous. You had a team who had 200 yards of offense and couldn't move the ball win.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, the MAC had a really down year. So there's two games with the MAC teams that I just have no interest in. Number one is the bowl between Pittsburgh and Eastern Michigan. To be honest with you, I didn't even know Eastern Michigan was bowl eligible until I saw the bowls come out. I can tell you I did not watch a second of Eastern Michigan this year. They were never on my radar. I can't tell you a single player from their team. And on the other side, you have Pitt, who, I mean, you know, it seems like every week Pitt is involved in a 20-17 football game. It just has no interest to me at all. Another game with the MAC team that I wouldn't want to watch is the New Mexico Bowl, Central Michigan, and San Diego State. You know, San Diego State's a team that, you know, loves the run, and hey, they're good at what they do. But Central Michigan with McElwain, we saw them in the MAC title game. They're just not an exciting team. To me, that matchup is weird. You know, Central Michigan traveling out to New Mexico just does nothing for me. I have no interest in that game. And the last game that, and it's a shame because, you know, it's a game with a rich tradition, but I want no part of the Gator Bowl this year. Tennessee and Indiana. I mean, just no, you know. And Indiana, hey, credit to them. They had they bounced back after a rough start. You know, Tom Allen's a pretty good coach there, but Tennessee finished 7-5. And I mean, you know, the running joke on this show has always been that the national media plays up Tennessee like they're some big contender. And we finally saw the end of that, you know, this going into this year, because expectations were so low for them. And at one point, I think they were 3-5, something like that. And they reeled off four or five straight wins to end the season. But if you look at the teams they played, it was the bottom of the SEC mixed in with a couple cupcakes, you know, that the SEC always schedules at the end of the year. And all of a sudden, again, you had someone on one of the national writers on Twitter said that that Jeremy Pruitt should get coach of the year. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, Tennessee is a subpar team at best, but they're sitting at 7-5 and they have a prime game. You know, the Gator Bowl is usually, you know, Michigan, Auburn, you know, Florida, you know, Florida, Ohio State, you know, those types of teams, Indiana and Tennessee. It just, no, I have no interest in seeing that. But yeah, so those are three I like and three I don't. And, I apologize if any of the ones that I don't are on your watch list, but, yeah, that's my breakdown.
And it's tough to watch CMU after that game. Like, and they've been playing like that all year. And you know, what's funny. Yeah. I mean, John can certainly expound on that somewhat with the MAC stuff, but I really like the call of the Cheez-It Bowl because you know how terrible that game was last year when it was Cal versus, I think it was TCU. I mean, that was rough. But this is the opposite of that. Yep. Very antithesis. Yeah.
Yep. And and hopefully the Washington State fans are going to be out in full force. And it's never a dull moment when Mike Leach is coaching, so that should be an interesting one.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's go to Andy, and let's get your bowl preview, the non-New Year's Six, your favorites, and your other bowls that you don't want to watch.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. So I circled a few games. The first one, you know, if Lane was there, I'd be really into it, and that's the Boca Raton Bowl. This SMU and Florida Atlantic, even without Lane, that has the potential just to be a straight-up shootout. And that's, yeah, it's next Saturday. It's part of that collection of, you know, like, that's a great – that is a great Saturday. I think there's, like – we'll take away the Celebration Bowl, but there's, yeah, six bowls. And then your NFL, and then you have maybe like a Christmas party or whatever. But that's a great Saturday, and there's no better way to get involved with the Boca Raton Bowl. So if you like offense, you're probably going to see it in that game. So that's one game that I circled and definitely would be into. Another game that might be off the beaten path is the I think it used to be the Gallery Furniture.com Bowl. Now it's called the Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl in Houston. And that is 2 days after Christmas, featuring Oklahoma State and Texas A&M. And between Jimbo Fisher and Mike Gundy, that's a lot of Mongo. So you really don't know what you're going to get in terms of that. So it's just something to kind of, you know, tantalizing eye candy, you know, glorious clown car potential. So that's another game that I would also be into. Another game we are going to be talking about is the Citrus Bowl. And I know I was like, well, it's a stale Michigan team and it's an unmotivated Alabama team. Both true. However, our friend Yachts will be in the building. And it's a rematch of a Orange Bowl from, I think, 1999 with Tom Brady, Sean Alexander. I remember that game really well. It went into overtime. I think it was, like, the first, like, BCS Bowl to go in overtime. And Alabama lost because their place kicker missed an extra point. So they lost by one. Tom Brady won the game. And we know what that, you know, Sean Alexander had a great NFL career. It was a good game down in Miami. So this year's version, like I said, Yachts will be in the building. You don't know the motivation that's going to be with Alabama, but, you know, with the three receivers, if they want to show up, they should be able to, you know, get the job done against Michigan. I don't know what Michigan's going to be doing, but we do know Alabama in the spot before. They do, with the exception of that 1 year where they killed Michigan State, they've lost to Utah, and I forget, they lost to, I think, maybe like a Big 12 school in another game where they weren't in the playoff and they just kind of, you know, went through the motion. So you got to keep an eye on for that. But those are some of the off-the-beaten-path little – yeah, I guess Citrus Bowl is not really off the beaten path, but you get the idea. Non-marquee bowl games that I'll definitely be into. I know there's going to be some overlap in the games that we wouldn't watch in our backyard, but we'll end up watching anyway because it's in between Christmas and New Year's, and we got Bowl Mania, and like we're just going to have to pay attention to. But if we had our druthers, we wouldn't watch them. I know there'll probably be some overlap, but I circled some ones with some minus marks here. And the first one I'll mention is I don't want anything to do with the Las Vegas Bowl with Boise State and Washington. Washington had a down year. I'm so sick of Boise State. It's like, oh, it's Chris Peterson's. Did you know he used to coach Boise State? I want – can we? How many like fluff pieces can we have on that? And it's just stale. I'm so sick of Boise State, and Washington is just now the narrative is they had a rebuild year from the start. Like, well, hold on now. A lot of people had them as a sleeper to make the playoff. Now we're saying it was a down year from the get-go or the rebuild. You're talking out of both sides of your mouth here, folks. So, Peterson's getting the send-off against a team that he used to coach. It's stale against stale, in my opinion. Another game that I have zero interest. I never get into this game to begin with. It's the Pinstripe Bowl. And this year, it's Wake Forest versus Michigan State. Michigan State, I'm guessing they won their last two games to make a bowl because they had such a horrendous start to the year. And D'Antonio was on the hot seat, I think. But lo and behold, they're in a bowl game. And that game is just atrocious, the Pinstripe Bowl. And you're going to get Yankee Twitter upset. You know, you don't want to damage. Even though the first Yankee game isn't for another 4 months, there's that outside chance that you're going to disrupt the turf. And then 4 months from now, Aaron Judge is going to sprain an ankle because of this football game that was played 4 months prior. So, that game is just atrocious. I never get into that Pinstripe Bowl. And this year will be no different between Michigan State and Wake Forest. We'll have to pick it, though, unfortunately. And then I think John's going to go in this direction, so I'll leave that game out. But I'm going to shout out to the Red Box Bowl. That's December 30th out in Santa Clara, where the 49ers play, and this game is between California and Illinois. I cannot get into this game. Last year, California put America in a coma in that. Dave, you mentioned the bowl game. I think it was TCU and Cal, and it was just like I think both teams had like backup quarterback. TCU might have even been on their third string quarterback, but it was just a cluster F of incompetence. And the fact that Illinois is bowling, I know they beat Wisconsin, whatever. In California, I know their coach, he's a young guy. He's good with defense, but I don't think he knows his way around offense. And they were 3-0 to start the year, but it's just not a good product to watch. I just can't get into it. So Redbox Bowl rounds out my three bowl games that if they were playing in my backyard, as Mad Dog Russo would say, I draw the blind. But we all know we'll be paying attention to them in some way, shape, or form because of the mania.
Oh, yeah, and the implications, the bowl pick'ems, and our usual stuff.
Yeah. And I do agree with Ron, like Tennessee, Indiana. We usually like the Gator Bowl, like Ron said, but I just I'm not watching Tennessee for the next, unless they play like Florida or Alabama. I just can't get wrapped up in Tennessee football. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even as bad as they were a year ago, right? But yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so let's go to John and let's now get your favorites and your games you don't want to see in your backyard.
Yeah, you guys took a good chunk of many of them. That Cheez-It Bowl last year was like the best worst bowl game I think I've ever seen. It was like five or six interceptions on each side. No one wanted to win. It was a true classic, but in the worst possible way. But I agree with Ron. That is going to be a fun one with Leach and Air Force. That's such a good Saturday night it's a Friday, the 27th, because you have USC and Iowa, which I agree is one that I'd like to see, and then Air Force and Washington State. So that's a nice action on the Friday night. I was actually going to mention that SMU-FAU game, so Andy mentioned that one, plenty of points there. Notre Dame and Iowa State is interesting. Notre Dame is always, they're always going to have a national following, and are they going to be disappointed that they're not in a New Year's Six Bowl? And Iowa State is always well coached, so that should be a decent matchup. I'm interested in seeing that one. And then I agree on the Citrus Bowl to see which team shows up, which Alabama team shows up, if they're going to be motivated. And then Michigan as well. I mean, if Harbaugh can't get them ready to play for this game, I mean, I don't know. We'll see about that one. See, there's really no other games that I was truly, like, really interested in terms of the non-New Year's Six. You guys already did a pretty good job with those. So I'll move on to the ones I wouldn't watch in my backyard. The schedule is interesting this year because of how, you know, Christmas and New Year's falls on a Wednesday, and because there's that extra week in the season, the 15 weeks compared to the usual 14. So we start off with two bowls on a Friday this year with the Bahamas Bowl and then the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl, whatever the hell that is. So you have Buffalo and Charlotte and Utah State, Kent State to start off the bowl season. That's Utah State, Kent State is not exactly thrilling. Anything with the MAC, I agree, is just not very, very entertaining at all this year. But and then at the end, it's just so bizarre because, okay, you play your New Year's Six bowl game. It's January 1st. You're thinking, all right, it's going to be a nice break here into the national championship. And then on January 2nd, here we go, Boston College and Cincinnati at 3 o'clock. I mean, who the hell wants to watch that at the Birmingham Bowl? I mean, that is bad. That is really bad. Boston College, I would not watch them if they were playing at the high school field down the street from me. Just a nondescript team who just fired their coach. I actually feel bad for Cincinnati, who had a really good year and is stuck playing Boston College in the Birmingham Bowl. That is horrible. The AAC needs to upgrade their bowls. And I know we didn't mention the coaching situation, but it just came to my mind. Adazio, who just got fired from Boston College, gets hired at Colorado State instantly. Like, what a complete and utter joke that is. Like, you want to just, you know, make yourself a 6-6 program for the next 5 years. That's what Colorado State just did. But anyway, I digress. So, yeah, that was number one or number three on my list. Number two was the Red Box Bowl, as Andy mentioned. You know, last year it was Oregon and Michigan State in a 7-6 slugfest. And the organizers of this bowl said to themselves, we love that so much. Let's get some more for this year with Cal and Illinois. And that might be the final score of this game. That is just a brutal game. And then, yeah, number one, Ron called it completely. Why in the world is Pitt playing Eastern Michigan? That just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Like, okay, usually the bowl in Detroit is like, okay, you want to put a MAC team in there, fine. But at least put them against a Big Ten team. You can kind of get a little juice in the crowd. Pitt and Eastern Michigan, no one wants to watch that. Like, there's no compelling reason to pair those teams together in a bowl game. You wouldn't even watch that game if it was like on a Friday night on ESPNU. Like, that's just the worst bowl matchup possible. I just can't even describe how bad that matchup is. But anyway, we'll have to, like you guys said, we'll have to pick it for Bowl Mania. It's probably not going to be a very competitive game, too. That's the thing. Pitt's probably just going to blow them off the field. But who cares? It's just not a good game at all. And earlier that day, so that's a great doubleheader. So you have Miami, Florida, and Louisiana Tech in Shreveport, and then you have Pitt and Eastern Michigan in Detroit. What a great doubleheader the day after Christmas. Ugh, that is ugly.
Yeah, that definitely is. Let me nominate a couple others, see what you guys think. That's a V. That's why I get so confused. Okay. Pretty much nothing to add as far as the favorites. Those, you all picked some good ones. I do like Utah, Texas, too, just because it's... I wonder if Utah is going to have anything left, but it's a good defensive team. Texas is kind of a good defensive team, so maybe that'd be a good game. What do you guys think of Navy Kansas State? Do you think that has potential? That'd be good. Anyone? Okay. Let me just see.
A lot of quarterback options in that game.
Yeah,
that could be interesting. Yeah. I mean, Navy always plays entertaining games, so yeah.
All right. So we got that in line two. And then as far as the worst, I agree with the Red Box Bowl. That's going to be brutal. What do you the Arizona Bowl is Wyoming versus Georgia State. That sounds pretty unwatchable. And then the Belk Bowl Virginia Tech versus Kentucky, and last time I saw Kentucky, they could barely score, so I don't really have high hopes for that one either. So that's it for me. Let's now move on to the big games, the New Year's Six. The non-playoff games are the Orange Bowl, featuring Florida and Virginia. Yeah, Ron had called this thing 2 months ago. He's like, we knew this was going to happen because of Ron's point about the ACC guaranteeing a spot. That is going to be a brutal game. The Cotton Bowl, Memphis and Penn State could be fun. Andy alluded to it. Rose Bowl with Wisconsin and Oregon. And the Sugar Bowl with Georgia, who could be deflated after losing so resoundingly to LSU, going against Baylor. At least on paper, it's two good teams with good defense. Then the playoff games, which come in the middle of all this. On a Saturday, the 28th, you have the Peach Bowl with Oklahoma and LSU. That's going to have a lot of... That seems like it could have a lot of offense, but I think LSU is a big favorite there. Then the Fiesta Bowl, which I think is the best game out of everybody. Clemson versus Ohio State. I mean, that is going to be an incredible game. So if you have it in picks, you can talk about... You can, like, save it for the picks. But we can talk about the New Year's Six briefly. And so I'll give it back to the panel. We'll start with Ron.
Yeah, I guess pretty decent matchups this year. I think that the two semifinal games are, legit, must-watch games. And when you think about it, the last couple of years, there was always a Notre Dame or, one of those teams in there who you knew just wouldn't compete. LSU, I think, is far and away better than Oklahoma, but Oklahoma always has the ability to put up a ton of points and make it a game. So even that one doesn't have a blowout, feel to it. Obviously the Orange Bowl is probably the worst of the group with Florida and Virginia. Going back to when I first saw that, the ACC was guaranteed a spot. I remember mentioning that there was the caveat where if there was no other ACC team ranked in the top 25 of the CFB poll, that they would, they could go out and basically get a, pick a team that they wanted to represent the ACC there. Could have been Notre Dame, could have been a Big Ten team. But the last week of the season, Virginia, who was 8-4 and looked like shit down the stretch, snuck in and got ranked number 24, which was just a farce. And it was all designed to be able to plug them into that Orange Bowl. And, to be honest with you, I hope Florida rolls over them. Florida's got a really good team this year. They were right outside of the cusp of being a legit national title contender, which I didn't think they would be going into the season. So I hope Florida rolls over them. And the Rose Bowl should be interesting to watch. Jonathan Taylor, he breaks records and everything, but it still seems like he's not appreciated as much as he should be because Wisconsin had a down year last year and they really didn't, they blew their big chance this year when they lost to Minnesota the week before Ohio State. I don't remember, but
go ahead.
Illinois they lost to. They lost to Illinois the week before they played Ohio State, and they were undefeated. So I know that knocks the wind out of Jonathan Taylor, but, man, he's you look at his stats since he started, 3 years of just consistently dominating football. In another year with maybe, if they had won that Illinois game, you might be talking – about him as a legit threat to Joe Burrow as a Heisman contender. But, that should be a good game with him and Oregon. Justin Herbert's last chance to show that he's a legit NFL prospect. I don't think he is, but I'm sure he'll get overdrafted. But, that should be an interesting matchup in the Rose Bowl. And, basically there's no unwatchable games in the New Year's Six, and that's, I guess, designed how it's supposed to be, but definitely the semifinal games are going to be the most interesting ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's going to be – I think that you have a – especially with the Fiesta Bowl, you have a case where it could really go either way. So, and even if you don't have it go either way with a Peach Bowl, it's going to be an entertaining game for sure. So now let's go to Andy and let's get your look at the New Year's Six.
Yeah, I mean, Ron nailed it. That it's a disgrace with Virginia. And I echo his thoughts. Like I hope Florida just pulverizes them. They're a much more watchable team with Mullen coaching them than they were with Muschamp and
McElwain.
And McElwain and, you know, Ron Zook before him, and even Urban Meyer. Those Florida teams are a little tough to take. Urban's tough to take to begin with anyway, but yeah, like they're back to the offense. They're much more fun to watch. And I think the future is bright in Gainesville. You know, Felipe Franks, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But, yeah, I'm rambling now. But, anyway, I hope Florida just destroys Virginia because Virginia, they do not belong in the Orange Bowl. And the fact that they get in because of some stupid tie-in clause is atrocious. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, it would be a little more juicy if the Memphis coach didn't get the Florida State job, and I'll still be rooting my cat for Memphis because I can't stand James Franklin. I just think he's just a total jerk. He's a jerk. And, you know, we'll see what happened with Oklahoma and LSU. You know, it's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. And right now you'd be tempted to take Oklahoma with the points, but you know, we also see what LSU is capable of doing. They can score just as fast as any of those Big 12 teams. And, you know, we know what happens with that Oklahoma defense as well. They could be a sieve. So, buyer beware if you do take Oklahoma. Ohio State Clemson is going to be a great one, I think. I don't know if it's possible, but I feel like Dabo Swinney is starting to almost develop a little bit of a heel persona. He's kind of gone from at first he went from doormat because Spurrier was beating Clemson all the time. And then Clemson finally starts to get some mojo. You know, Clemson used to always, you don't hear that saying, you know, Clemson did. You know, they'd always stub their toe at the worst moment, whether it was against FSU or even someone inferior in that conference. But, they've slowly turned into a powerhouse, and now Dabo is, you know, he starts to ruffle his feathers. He's getting a little sensitive. He takes the criticism about the ACC a little to heart. So he's kind of going a little heel, if you can believe it. But that game will be a lot of fun. And then, some of those other games will be good too. I'll actually be into the. I feel like Oregon and Wisconsin, I don't have Elias stats in front of me, but I feel like Oregon and Wisconsin in college basketball meet a lot, you know, 2 seed versus 7 seed. And I don't, Dave, you might be able to look it up if you got the computer on, but I feel like Oregon and Wisconsin has played in a Rose Bowl in the past, but I'll be into this. Don't really have a winner in mind. I just, you know, I love watching that Rose Bowl. You know, there's that one year where I didn't watch because Iowa was involved, but, you know, if it's a nice day, that setting, that building, it's must watch. And then the Sugar Bowl. Yeah, Dave, you mentioned it too. Like it's, two very good defenses. And you question the motivation with both those schools because they both had a lot to play for 4 days ago, and now their consolation prize is still a very good bowl game. But you question the motivation. You remember last year Georgia was in the same spot and they lost to Texas outright, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe history repeats itself again.
And I will confirm for you that Oregon did play against Wisconsin in the 2012 Rose Bowl, and they won 45-38. Good game. Good game. Okay. Very good. Who was the quarterback back then? Was that Mariota?
It was Russell Wilson.
Oh, and Wilson for Wisconsin. That's true. That, yeah. That was a good game. Wow. How about that? All right. So with that, I think we're ready to go to John. Let's get your New Year's Six preview.
Yeah, I'll echo the sentiments on the guys about the ACC. I mean, like, Notre Dame is like a quasi-ACC team. They play six games a year. Why don't you just stick Notre Dame in there? I don't care. I mean, at least it would be a better matchup than Florida and Virginia. It's just, as I said before, like, the whole – they wanted to blow up the entire system when UConn made it as an 8-4 team from the Big East. And yet now no one's – I haven't heard any national media bitching about this game, of course, because it's the ACC. It's just – such a joke. Virginia should not be in that game. They should be in the Belk Bowl or something. But anyway, that's the most unwatchable game of the four. You know, we'll see about Memphis if they can get up to play without Norvell. I think a huge key to when Central Florida beat Auburn 2 years ago was Scott Frost stayed for the game, which was unbelievable that he did that. But you could clearly tell that he wanted to finish the season, and the players really, you know, bought into him for that and, you know, respected him and wanted to send him out a winner. And, you know, that was a huge, huge key for them winning. And, you know, without Norvell, I don't know. We'll see if their offense can do as well. There's certainly – their defense isn't very good, so I think Penn State will probably end up winning that, even though you don't like to see the group of five team. You like to see the group of five team win in this scenario, but I don't know if I see it this year. Yeah, the Sugar Bowl, it's going to be if Georgia wants to show up again or wants to play. Last year they did not show up against Texas. You know, we'll see where they are in terms of their health, too. I mean, they have a lot of injuries. Same thing with Baylor. If Brewer is going to be there after the concussion he got. So you really have to be careful when picking this one. There's really a lot of unknown factors on both sides. And, yeah, the Rose Bowl should be pretty good. I agree with you guys. You know, Herbert, we'll see if he can elevate his draft stock even more. And then Wisconsin, you know, Jonathan Taylor and that run game is always interesting to watch. It'll just be a very close, competitive game, which is what you want for a Rose Bowl scenario. You don't want the sun to be setting on New Year's 1st, on January 1st over those mountains, and it'd be like a 30-10 game. It just completely takes the fun out of it. But, and obviously the two playoff games, I don't know if we're going to be talking about those separately, but, you know, the Fiesta Bowl is just going to be excellent. Clemson and Ohio State. I mean, the fight for the number one seed was key because obviously Oklahoma is the weakest of the four teams, and whoever plays them, I mean, you're not saying it's like a bye week, but you'd rather be playing them than playing either Clemson or Ohio State. So LSU in that regard definitely has an advantage. And it should be a war between Clemson and Ohio State. I do not know who I would pick at the moment. I guess I would lean Clemson just because of the experience that Dabo has in these kind of situations compared to Ryan Day. He's done a great job, but obviously it's his first year at Ohio State as the head coach. So definitely some more time to think about that one. But I would say the only unwatchable game out of these is the Florida-Virginia game. Maybe Penn State-Memphis if it turns into a blowout, but you always tune into that anyway to see if there's any juice at the start. But not bad matchups at all this year.
No, not at all. And I think that's a good summary of all the games. We've pretty much covered everything from the Bowl Mania season. So let's get to the picks, and we'll pick two of these bowl games, which extend all the way from the beginning, the Bahamas Bowl, all the way to the end with the New Year's Six. So it should be a fun time. We start with Ron in New Jersey. And Ron, when you're ready, let's hear your picks.
All right. First game I'm taking is USC +2 against Iowa in the Holiday Bowl. I think USC wins that game outright. I think they have more to play for. Their trajectory is going on a different path than Iowa. Iowa, you know, it seems like they're going to be going into a regression next year, losing Stanley and a big chunk of the offensive line and their best defensive player and Espinosa. And USC is a young team, a lot to play for. You know, they have a pretty bright future. I just feel like that game is going to be a shootout, and that type of game is going to favor USC, who loves to throw the ball. So I'll take USC +2 against Iowa. And my second game, I'm going to take Western Kentucky -3.5 over Western Michigan. Western Kentucky had a
tremendous turnaround year this year under I can't remember who the coach's name is, Todd Helton, something like that, whoever it is. They were 4-8 last year. They completely turned it around, going 8-4 this year. They have a high-powered offense, score a lot of points, and they're playing a Western Michigan team who I think, and I can't remember who they played this year, but they played on one of the MACtion games on Tuesday night on the road and won a close game in the last seconds. And it was their first road win, I think, in 2 years. And they even had a chance to lock up their division the last game of the season on the road against a bad Northern Illinois team, and they couldn't win there. They're a team that can only win when they're in their own stadium. And I know, you know, technically it's a neutral game, but I don't trust them for the life of me. You know, they have a pretty good running back. The quarterback, Wasanik, is nothing to write home about. If you get into a shootout with Western Kentucky, you're going to have to throw the ball. I don't trust Western Michigan being able to do that, so I'll take Western Kentucky -3.5 over Western Michigan.
All right, thanks for the picks, Ron, and good luck. Let's now go to Andy in Seattle, and let's get your two bowl picks.
Thanks, Dave. We're gonna go to New Mexico here, and we're going to have an anti-MAC pick. We're going to take San Diego State, giving 3.5 against Central Michigan. I don't think Jim McElwain is going to have his team prepared or give any sort of effort against San Diego State. As John mentioned in the recap, they look like clowns in the second half. They even looked like clowns in the first half. They had everything going for them. The only points they gave up was on a kickoff, and they tried a fake punt from like their own 15-yard line, and they're clowns. And yeah, San Diego State, they're not a very exciting team. Rocky, love you long time, is big on defense and running the ball, but I think that recipe will be all you really need to take care of business. And this is anti-MAC. I might just bet against every MAC school this year as a as an experiment, and we'll let you know how we do. We'll probably see this.
There's too many of them.
Tweet. Yeah, I know. I remember when Mike used to, when Umar used to capture the audio, Mike would be like no one used to, no one from the MAC went to the bowl games, and now five teams from the MAC go to bowl game. This year it's even more. So this was just a bad year for the MAC all around. It's fun when they play each other, but when they get paired up against other schools, whether it's the Sun Belt or Conference USA, it gets a little dicey, and in this case the Mountain West. So game number one, give me San Diego State -3.5. And then game number two, Dave, I will take Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl, getting 3.5 from Notre Dame. Again, this is probably a personal bias. I just can't close my eyes and ever see a Brian Kelly team motivated for bowl games. There's 1 year against LSU. I don't know. I just don't have good feelings with Notre Dame in postseason play. Even when it's a playoff, when it's a meaningless bowl, when it's a whatever it is. And as we alluded to, the Iowa State coach, he has his team prepared. I know that they had a tough game last year in the bowl against Washington State. But Iowa State, I know they got like five losses or whatever, but they're all pretty close. Like, I don't have the book in front of me, but I feel like all the Iowa State games this year have been very close, very slim margins, and you're getting 3.5. And we know we're not fans of Ian Book by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's just not a very good college quarterback. And when it comes to motivation in these bowl games, it's kind of key. And I just don't see Brian Kelly being into it as much as the Iowa State coach. So give me Iowa State getting 3.5 Camping World Bowl to match up with Rocky Long and San Diego State, giving 3.5 against Central Michigan in the New Mexico Bowl.
All right, thank you, Randy. Good picks. I think the it may be a spite pick, but it's a pretty good spot. And just to prove your point, you need to only go back to last year's playoff where Clemson beat Notre Dame 30-3. I mean, this team does not get it done in a big spot. So, very good. Let's go to John in Connecticut, and let's get your bowl picks.
All right, thanks, Dave. Yeah, lots to choose from. There's 40 of them. We'll probably have a bet on all of them. Certainly we'll have the Bowl Mania scenario. But to narrow it down to two, we'll start off here. We'll go to that Boca Bowl. And I'm going to take SMU, giving the 3.5 points. Wish it was 3, but we got to be honest here. It's showing 3.5. I just think losing Kiffin to Ole Miss and to have such a short turnaround from the end of the season to playing this conference title game is it's really going to hurt them. SMU, their only two losses on the year were at Memphis by 6, and then at Navy, which was another close game. So they've been putting up all sorts of points all year long, and I just think the quality of their team at this stage is much stronger, especially with their head coach still being there. As far as I know, Sonny Dykes is not taking any other job opportunities. So I'm not, you know, SMU's defense is not very good. So Florida Atlantic's still going to score, but this could be like a 45-31 kind of game. I think SMU is just too good in this spot for Florida Atlantic. So SMU minus 3.5 for the first game. And then game two, I'm going to fade the corpse that is the Utah Utes in the Alamo Bowl. So we will take Texas getting the 7. Now, I know Texas, they might not want to be here, but I'll trust Tom Herman to get his team ready as a dog rather than Winningham to get his team ready after they literally just could have made the college football playoff and is settling for this game. And especially after the egg they laid in last year's bowl game against Northwestern, we did not forget that one either. So, you know, maybe Utah shows up and it's a close game, but giving 7 to Tom Herman in this spot, I love Texas. So give me Texas plus 7 in addition to SMU minus 3.5 for one of the earlier bowl games.
Okay, thank you very much, John. And I'm going to do you one better with the Texas game. I'm going to give you 7.5 because it's in my picks. I'm going to go with I'm going to go checker on a checker with checker. And we're taking Texas plus 7.5 in the Alamo Bowl. Pretty much the same thing that he said. I just can't imagine Utah being motivated for this game. I feel like Texas is going to have a shot at this. And it will be one of the best tests of the common adage of Herman as an underdog. Now, that hasn't worked out too well this year. But this time out, I do think the Texas defense is pretty decent, at least for a Big 12 team. So this is going to be a fun game. I think they have a real shot here. Game number two, we're going to take Florida giving the 14. The people here were right. Their defense is so good. I can't see how Virginia even scores a touchdown in this game. So Florida minus 14 versus Virginia in the Orange Bowl to go with Texas plus 7.5 in the Alamo Bowl. That'll do it for the regulars. Now let's go to the guest picks. And they come from Shuren, otherwise known as Chris in Floral Park. Not that one. Not the one that said that Mike got pulverized in the ratings. Different for Chris from Floral Park, but a good friend of ours from the board. And he sends these picks to us. He first goes Outback. Not Australia, but I think this is Florida. And he's going to take Auburn minus 7.5 versus Minnesota in the Outback Bowl. Game number two for Sharon. He's going to go Alabama giving the 7 against Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. A game that we've talked up a bit, and for good reason. This could be a very fun game. So, once again, Auburn minus 7.5 and Alabama minus 7. Two SEC teams for Sharon to close out the year of guest picks in college football. Oh, and he provides a bonus pick. His bonus pick is Navy minus 10.5 against Army in the Army-Navy game. I agree with that I would pick the same thing. I also like the under in the Army-Navy game as well. So, there it is for the picks for the year. And man, that's it for college football picks. Look at that. Very sad. Okay, so let's get right to the NFL. And we are short in time, so let's just get right to it. Recap time from the NFL. Ron, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet, Dave. the best game last weekend was, I think everybody could agree, was that New Orleans-San Francisco game, which going into it, you would think maybe the you would have hit the under and it would have been a low-scoring game. Completely opposite. It seemed like it was like 35-31 at half. Just two teams going back and forth all game long. And credit to Kyle Shanahan for, if you're a fan of the 49ers, you have to be a fan of Kyle Shanahan because, I mean, he's calling plays that, you would call on like Madden or playing video games. Reverses, going forward on fourth down, flea flickers. He makes the game interesting, and that was a tremendous game. That Kittle, catch and run at the end to set up that field goal was tremendous. But I guess the overall theme from last week, again, with the NFL was the questionable officiating. Even in that San Francisco New Orleans game, there was a bunch of calls that were ticky tack or could have went either way. In the Jets Dolphins game, the last drive where the Jets ended up getting a field goal to win, it was a 3rd and 17. The Jets threw an incompletion, and Miami seemingly had the game won, and it gets called a defensive holding. 5-yard penalty, first down, automatic first down. Jets end up kicking a field goal and winning. The Chiefs and Patriots game, which I'm sure Andy has a lot more feelings about than I do, but ton of questionable calls in that game as well. So you had a lot of good football. The Chargers blowing the doors off the Jaguars, which I didn't see at all. I didn't see coming at all. But he had a lot of good football, but again, the officiating takes away from it a little bit. And I was reading some before that, after the year, the owners are going to discuss the officiating from the top down. So hopefully there's changes coming next year. It's been too uneven this year. I hate the defensive holding calls. I understand why you call them, but it seems like whenever there's a close play, the refs are inclined to throw a flag out there. And the automatic first down is a killer on that call. I feel like they use that as a crutch now that the pass interference is reviewable. And it's certainly set up some questionable outcomes. So that's what I took from last week. So a lot of good football, but again, the officiating leaves a lot to be desired.
I think everyone's on the same boat with you on that one, Ron. Okay, recap time for Andy in Seattle.
Yeah, that Saints-Niner game was a lot of fun to watch. Even more fun if you had Niners getting 1.5. He had to sweat out that 2-point conversion, but obviously it ultimately didn't matter because Kittle made that great play on fourth down. But it was a crazy game. I mean, the Niners were up 9 with like 3 minutes left, and it was just great back and forth drama. Throwback game for ass clown Drew Brees, because we know we talked about it last week on this program. Like, it's a different type of Saints offense, more running game oriented, more deliberate drives. But when push came to shove, they were having that quick strike, big play offense that we're used to seeing. But again, ass clown, whether it's Breeze or in this case Sean Payton, they went for 2 early in the game. They had to go 2, they had to go for 2 again, and it kind of bit them in the fanny. And just kudos to San Francisco. That Kittle play was amazing on 4th and 2. And then we can talk about the Browns and the Bengals, but we won't. We can talk about the Cowboys laying that egg on Thursday night, but we don't have to do that either. The Patriot game, I can't really get too caught up in the official fiasco. I mean, the scoop and score might have been a scoop and score, but it wasn't. And then the Kane touchdown or the N'Keal Harry touchdown. Be that as it may, the Patriots still had the ball at the 3-yard line. They didn't score. Jacoby Myers dropped the ball two plays later. I think, to use our friend LT's term, the haunting moment in that game actually was the Chiefs' first drive of the game. Mahomes threw an interception, and the Patriots got the ball at the Chiefs 40, up 7-0. They had a chance to go up two scores. They didn't, and that was haunting. The Patriots missed a field goal, and after that, it made Belichick go for it on fourth down and field goal range again. They left points on the board regardless of the officiating. They left points on the board. The Chiefs defense is not very good, and the Patriots needed to rely on gimmicks and French laundry plays, smoke and mirrors. So you can't, the rest might have hated the Patriots that day, but they didn't lose because of the refs. That's what I'm trying to say. They lost because of their own shortcomings. I was a little, in hindsight, I was chasing, and I bet with my heart with Seattle. We made that pick on this program, and in hindsight, we should have seen it coming because Seattle had some wiggle room to lose this game, whereas the Rams basically had everything to play for, and they looked like a team that had everything to play for. And so that was just a bad pick by me. Bad job all around with that Seattle pick. That wasn't a very good game, to be honest with you, on that Sunday night. The Bills-Ravens game was a little entertaining. The Bills, they tried to come back, but they just came up a little short. That was entertaining. I watched a lot of that Bucks-Colts game was kind of like a shit show you couldn't keep your eye off of. Just a lot of offense and not a lot of defense. Something's rotten in Oakland again. I don't know what happened there. The Titans are like they are just balls to the wall now. They got the inside edge now on the AFC South. I mean, just when everyone starts to maybe give the Texans some respect after they beat Belichick and Brady on a Sunday night, well, what happens? They lose to a Denver Broncos team that was basically in comatose on the road. And they were down like 38-3, I think, in the third quarter. That's just a bad look for the Texans. And then I'm actually still trying to, the Eli game. That should be this. I don't know why we haven't talked about Eli in that Monday night game. No, I'm just kidding. That was that frickin' NFC East is just beyond a dumpster fire, and it's a shame that one of those teams between Dallas and Philadelphia are going to get a home game. But that's the rules. That's the way. I mean, no one complained when Seattle got a home playoff game in 2011. It was when they were 7-9. It happens once in a blue moon. But I feel like that year, like at least the Rams and the Saints and the Seahawks weren't like complete clowns. I guess they kind of were because they were 7-9 or whatever. But I mean, the Eagles, man, they lost to the Dolphins the week before, and you're down to 17-3 to freaking Pat Schmer and company, and we're going to take your playoff hopes like seriously. It's tough to take.
Yeah, that certainly was the best kind of bad football, as I denoted it on Twitter last night. I mean, it was not last night, on Monday night. That was something. Okay, John, let's get your recap of the NFL.
Yeah, nothing much to add. The Niners-Saints game very easily could be an NFC championship preview game. It was just very impressive how each coach like literally found the weakness of the other team and just completely exploited it. I mean, the over 44 points was done in the second quarter. I mean, just some very impressive offensive game planning and play calling. And I was glad to see that the Niners pulled out that victory as well. You guys were mentioning the officiating.
I did not see the play in the Jets-Dolphins game, but apparently Brian Flores just went completely apeshit at the end of the game. There was like a pass interference that set up the Jets winning field goal. And there's just another example there of the officiating, you know, kind of hurting some teams. I guess I'll mention the Packers. They kind of just went through the motions against the Redskins. They got up 14-0 in the first quarter and then really didn't do anything the rest of the game. Hey, great field position, but just Rodgers, they just weren't in sync. And they really didn't need to do much. I mean, Haskins and the Redskins, they just play at such a slow pace. They just really just want to run the ball. And, they did just enough to win. But we'll see three division games coming up, Bears this week, and then a huge game on Monday Night Football against the Vikings. Oh, my God, I cannot. Ugh, the Packers and Vikings playing for the division with Booger McFarland calling the game. I'm going to pull my hair out watching that game. It's going to be awful. But in any event, the Titans, I was wrong about this pick. I thought the Raiders were going to show up. And it was 21-21 at halftime, but Ryan Tannehill, all of a sudden, maybe he's in the right scheme now. Who knows? Maybe his stint on the bench just kind of refocused. I don't know. They are just a really dangerous team at the moment. We'll see if they can keep this going. They play the Texans two times in the final 3 weeks, just a scheduling quirk. So they're going to play this week and then in week 17. So that very well could be your Sunday night flex game, I guess, for week 17 in the AFC South again. The Chiefs, Patriots. Patriots definitely did not take advantage of their opportunities. And Andy said it, they had to use trick plays to move the ball down the field. They something's not right with their offense. They're going to be in the playoffs, but something's going to have to change for them at this point if they're going to beat the Ravens and get back to the Super Bowl. I guess that's all I'll mention. We can get to the picks. The other guys did a pretty good job of recapping the week, and should be another exciting week coming up.
Yeah, actually, it won't be as great as last week, but it still could be pretty good. If you're looking ahead at the week of NFL, you mentioned Bears versus the Packers. Now, that one's on this week's version is on Fox. Houston, Tennessee. Wow, Tennessee in the driver's seat. Andy's right. And then the Rams at Dallas, who are just in free fall. And then it could be a really sneaky game between the Vikings and the Chargers. I'm interested to see if you guys have it in picks. And then the big one. Buffalo Bills against my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday Night Football. Good job out of the NFL flexing this game, because this could be a real showdown of two good defenses. I'm really looking forward to that. So with that in mind, let's go to the picks, and this will close it out for the contest this year. And we'll start with Ron in New Jersey's NFL picks when you're ready, Ron.
All right, thanks, Dave. Actually, before I get into the picks, and I was reminded of this from what John said about the Vikings and the Packers Monday night game. Just a quick aside, I know last week Peloton, the Peloton bikes, the company as a whole probably suffered. It's one of the worst weeks a company could ever have, getting blasted with their stupid fucking television commercial, which bombed and made the stock drop, I think, 8% one day, 7% the next. I mean, you basically had the entire country against one fucking exercise bike company. And in the middle of that, there's one man who had the balls to go on Twitter to defend Peloton and say that he is a big fan of the company and will back them for the rest of his life. And who is that one man? Booger McFarland. If you ever needed another reason to hate Booger fucking McFarland, he's on Twitter defending Peloton. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, put Dave Medina on Monday Night Football, please. I mean, he might be one of the worst human beings outside of a dictator that you can find in the world. Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. I remember that from the other day. And, it just goes to show just how god awful that Monday Night Football broadcast is. But back to the picks, I guess. First,
first game I'm going to go is, and I hate to do this, you know, because I don't want to get a big finger or anything, but I'm going to go with the Bucks minus 3.5 on the road against the Lions. I think the bloom is off the David Blau rose, if there ever was a bloom on his rose. I mean, he's just he's not an NFL quarterback. Marvin Jones is out. Hockenson's out. They're down to, you know, Kenny Golladay and nobody else, basically. And Arians has Winston, you know, putting up 30-plus FanDuel points a week, you know, just throwing the ball 50 times a game. I'm thinking the Bucks win that one and cover the spread. So I'll take the Bucks minus 3.5. And the second game, I'm going to take the Packers minus 4.5 against the Bears. I think Trubisky comes back down to earth this week. I think, like John said, the Packers were going through the motions last week against the Redskins, and who could blame them? I think they get up for it, you know, this week against the division rival. And, you know, I like the Packers to win by at least a touchdown. So my picks are the Bucks minus 3.5 and the Packers minus 4.5.
If you remember, that Packers-Bears matchup was also week one of the NFL season, the first game played in the NFL this year, and that was a pretty rough game offensively. I think we can at least be assured that that'll be better than the previous game back in week one. So good luck to the picks on that, Ron, and thanks. And good luck to the picks to everybody so far. Let's go to Andy, and let's get your NFL picks for week number 15.
Okay, Dave. Game number one, I'm going to take the Rams, giving one at Dallas. We're getting 3 weeks in a row of Cowboy Joe Buck Troy Aikman treatment. The sad thing about this is if Dallas doesn't even need this game, you know, Dallas could lose this game and they still have everything in front of them. And again, to beat the dead horse, the Rams, they're up against it. You know, they want to overtake Minnesota. They got to win them all. So you know, the Dallas has lost, you know, 3 games in a row or whatever. They made the Bears' offense look fluid and well-oiled, which is hard to do. They embarrassed themselves on Thanksgiving. Maybe the best recipe for the Rams is they let Dallas go up 7-0, because that's happened 2 games in a row, and then Dallas hasn't been able to do anything since. Now, the Rams, you know, maybe it was that game against Arizona where the, you know, Goff got some confidence. Maybe they had that rock bottom moment in front of Booger on that Monday night in Baltimore. But since then, you know, Goff had that crazy game against Arizona. That he looked good, especially in that first half against Seattle. The running, you know, Gurley had probably his best game of the year that Sunday night against Seattle. They were doing that, like, end-around play over and over again. And as we know, the Cowboys this year, they don't seem to adjust very well. So I think L.A. can take advantage of this malaise that the Cowboys seem to be in this year. And they need this game more than Dallas. So we just want to see like a 6-8 versus 6-8 game next week between the Eagles and the Cowboys. So give me the Rams minus one for game number one. And then game number two, Dave, we'll take Tennessee, giving three against Houston. The game's in Nashville. I think the crowd is going to be bonkers. You know, this Tennessee team all of a sudden got a little mojo. They, as we know, they were pretty stale with Mariota for a bunch of years. You know, jury's still out on Vrabel as a head coach. Remember, there was that game earlier this year where the guy missed like 5 field goals in a row or whatever. But they seem to have moved on, and you know, that game against the Chiefs was pretty crazy. They just seem to be they just got some mojo right now, and we know Houston, they're just very up and down. Very up and down. That's basically Bill O'Brien's calling card. Just can never really figure them out. And, yeah, it could all go belly up for Nashville and Tennessee this year, but they got everything in front of them. And, you know, it's interesting, this AFC playoff picture, you know, you got you know, Buffalo, you got Tennessee, you got a rejuvenated Steeler team. I'm into it. So, you know, Nance and Tony are going to be at this game. So give me Tennessee, given 3 against the Texans in the AFC South matchup. And then, like I said earlier, give me the Rams, giving 1 at Dallas.
All right. Thank you very much, Andy. Now let's go to John, and let's go to his picks for week number 15.
All right, Dave. So I'm going to pick against 2 dead teams this week. First game, I'm going to take Seattle, giving 6 on the road against Carolina. I usually don't like to take Seattle. I think their record's a little inflated. I mean, I think they have a negative point differential, and they have 10 wins, which is just unheard of in the NFL. I mean, they've had a number of one-possession wins. But I just think Carolina is just packed it in on the season. Obviously, Ron Rivera was just fired. Kyle Allen has completely regressed since his hot start, and they just have not showed up in weeks. Seattle does need this game to stay in the division race, as San Francisco is probably going to beat Atlanta for sure later in the afternoon. So give me the Seahawks to rebound from the loss on Monday night and take their anger out, I guess, and get back on track against the dead Panthers. So give me Seattle -6 for game 1. And game 2, how could you ever take the Jacksonville Jaguars right now? Another team that's just completely quit on the season. So I know Oakland hasn't looked great lately, but this is going to be their last ever home game in Oakland. You think this is going to be a wild scene for this game? I think they're going to send them out right before they go to Vegas. Josh Jacobs is back playing. I think that was a huge key that they missed him on Sunday against Tennessee. And like I said, it was 21-21 at halftime. So the final score was a little bit misleading. It's not like they were blown out from the start of the game. So I just think they're going to beat this dead Jaguars team. So Oakland -6.5 for a farewell game in Oakland as they head to Vegas. And then Seattle -6 for NFL Week 15.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much for the picks. I also love the over in that Raiders-Jaguars game. The Jaguar defense is so bad. So I'll give you that call as well. Now let's go to me. Okay, we'll go to me for a pick. So here we go. Let's get to it. Get the music. Okay. Week 15 in the NFL. I'm going to go with these 2 selections. We're going to start on Thursday night. And this is going to be a goofy pick, but I'm going to take the Jets +15 at the Ravens on this principle. The Jets are ranked 2nd in the NFL in defensive efficiency against the run. And since the Ravens are built around the run, whether it's Lamar or whether it's Mark Ingram or other people running the ball, I feel like that's going to keep them in it a little longer than people expect. So I'm going to go with the Jets in a sort of closer game. Jets +15. Game number 2, we're going to go checker with Andy, and we're going to take the Rams, giving the 1 at the Cowboys. I have not trusted this team all year. And nobody gets more national television games than these guys, and nobody deserves a national broadcast less than the Cowboys. So it's probably spite on my part, but they're not good. Their defense is not, well, their pass defense is not good. I think they have a decent D-line, but their offense is not good. This is not a good team. So needless to say, I think the Rams have been playing better anyway. Better defense. Even Goff's been playing okay. So Rams -1 to go with Jets +15. All right, next we go to Sharon's picks, and here they are for week number 15. This will round it out for the football picks week in 2019. Here we go. Sharon selects the Titans -3, going checker with, I think that was Andy, against the Texans. His 2nd pick is Dolphins +3.5 at the Giants. So Titans -3 and Dolphins +3.5 for that, for Sharon. To round out the season, and thanks to everybody who has come in for football picks this year, the guests, and most importantly, the 3 of you guys on the phone with me right now. Really great to do this again. It's going to be fun to blaze the bowls, and I really just want to thank you very much for your time, even though we did, you know, way less shows than we normally do. But the shows we did were pretty good. It was a lot of fun. So that's all I've got to say, you know, with regards to the program. Good luck to your picks. Have a wonderful holiday season. Any plans for you or anything like that? We'll give it to you guys for final thoughts. I hope that everything goes well for you in this festive time of year. So, Ron, final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I just want to say thanks to you, Dave, and, you know, Andy and John and the guest picks. It was a fun year. Look forward to doing it again. Look forward to blazing some big bowls, and I hope everybody has a really nice holiday season, whether you celebrate Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever, you know, as long as we get a couple of days off of work and get to see some family and friends, I think everybody wins. So thanks again, Dave, and the rest of the crew, and happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, feelings mutual, Ron. Andy, John, you guys are the best. Let me give it to you, Andy, for final thoughts as well.
Yeah, happy holidays. It was great program, per usual. Looks like Ron clinched the contest, so congratulations. And we'll do it again next year, and we'll say how fast the season's going to go. And the winter meetings are in full swing right now, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait for Garrett Cole to have his first, like, go six innings and give up five runs, you know, April 27th against the Blue Jays, and just everyone just getting completely irate. But that's when you are a fan and a player in a pressure cooker market that is New York City and the team that is the New York Yankees, everything's bigger, everything's better, everything's greater. So good luck, Garrett Cole. Hope you know what you just got yourself into.
Yeah, very true. 9 years, about $300 million. I mean, that's a lot of pressure. So thanks, Andy. I appreciate that very much. Now let's go to John. Final thoughts.
Yeah, great year. Happy holidays to everyone. My little surge at the end of the year, I've guaranteed that even if I lose all four of these picks, I will not be under 500 this year. So that was a goal of mine. Congrats to Ron on the contest. I did finish over 500, which was a personal goal, so that was nice. Enjoy the bowl blazing. It should be. I cannot wait to watch them all. I know we said the games that we wouldn't watch in our backyard, but I'll be right there for that Bahamas Bowl to start things off, and then to follow them through and to the national championship. And I'm sure Dave, you'll have us back on, I guess, in January or whenever to talk about that, and then the NFL playoffs. So it should be a lot of fun, and I hope everyone enjoys some time with family and friends and enjoys the holidays.
Thanks so much, John. Have a great holidays, everybody. Congratulations, Ron. That just a tremendous job. I mean, that 13-14 week run was great. Take care, everybody. We'll see you guys next year, 2020. Look at that. Good luck, everybody.
Good night.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Night, everyone. Yeah. Take care. Season's greetings. All right. Well, that's our panel. That's the show. That's our contest, and that's the season. We will give you one more show. We're gonna do the. In fact, it's actually already up, so you can listen to the top five episodes of 2018, on the DidCow feed now. And so check that out as well. Have a great rest of your year, everybody. We've enjoyed 2019. We hope to be back in 2020. And I'll give you this little nugget: Kevin on the Cape's coming back too. We're going to do a random questions in January, so listen for that coming up in the next year. 10 years of DidCow, and the year number 11 also in the books. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good Christmas, Hanukkah, what have you. We'll see you next time.